Succession number 19858, Reel 4.
Major French, Reel 4.
Well, I'm really glad that I got there when we did, because some of my friends from other regiments got out there just about the time the armistice was being signed. We were, of course, there in the last year of the war. Had I been there in the early 1950s and 51, when it was a completely different war, a war of movement, very, very heavy casualties being taken by the Brits and by others. They didn't have any of the cold weather clothing, and they must have suffered tremendously. And, you know, to be quite honest, I'm very glad I wasn't involved in the early part of the war, but I'm glad I was at the time we were there, 52, 53.
After the Korean War, did you experience any other active service?
No, not in that sense at all. We went from Korea to Egypt, where we were in the canal zone. It wasn't on a war footing, but of course one had to be very, very careful of the Egyptians, who didn't like us being out there, and so whenever we moved, we had to be armed and two or three vehicles together. We were going down to Port Tufik or somewhere for a holiday weekend. Then after that, I was still a signals officer then, we went to the Sudan, Khartoum, and a company up in the Red Sea Hills at Gabait. But we weren't, of course, on a war footing then, but it was just the time that the condominium was coming to an end, and they were about to get their independence. And so one had to be very ready for any eventualities. But that was an interesting year in Khartoum and exercises and so on in the desert and the appalling heat. And then after that, I came back to the Tower of London as adjutant of our depot. And then I went out from there to command a company of the King's African Rifles in Kenya. And again, one had to be ready for any internal security operations, because this was after the Mau Mau. I wasn't involved in the Mau Mau, but it was just about before independence. So one was on a high operational footing, but there weren't any sort of war-y stories at that stage of my career. And then the nearest I got, I suppose, to operate, I was never in Northern Ireland. I was second in command of the battalion of the Royal Fusiliers. In fact, I was the last second in command of the 1st Battalion Royal Fusiliers and the first second in command of the 3rd Battalion Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. Because when we were in Sharjah in the Persian Gulf, we all the English Fusilier regiments were formed into one. That was the Northumberland, Lancashire Royal and Warwickshire's, and we ceased to be our own regiments and we became the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. So that was, we were the first battalion in Sharjah, in the United Arab Emirates, as it became, after the Brits pulled out of Aden. So we were on an operational footing there, and one used to do interesting patrols with the Crucial Omen Scouts and operate in Muscat and Oman a bit and down at Dhofar, but we weren't caught up in any of the major operations out there, which had happened some years before, and in fact, of course, some years after we left at the Dhofar operations commanded by John Akers, who later became the Deputy Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, and has just written a very good book about his life, and he happens to live next door to me here in Warminster.
So when did you retire from the Army?
My last job in the Army was running the Bristol University Officer Training Corps, marvellous undergraduate cadets there, And we used to go on, I used to take them on exercises on Salisbury Plain, and we did a lot of adventure training and so on in the Brecon Beacons and places like that. And so then that was in 1984 that I left, and that's when I left the Army. And then I went to work for the Army as what's called a retired officer at the headquarters United Kingdom Land Forces outside Salisbury. And I did that job technically as a civil servant, but of course with one's military background. I did that for just a bit over 10 years, and then I retired completely. And I now, in my free time, apart from I write, I had a book published to myself the other day, but I still spend quite a lot of time running in this part of Wiltshire a thing called Soldier Sailors and Airmen's Family Association, and that is looking after the widows of old soldiers, serving soldiers, old pensioners and people like that who've had any connection with the Army. And I've got a marvellous small team who help me, and we operate in this part of Wiltshire, in Saffa. And I've been doing that. In fact, I mean, I started that back in 84, so I've been doing that for about over 15 years now.
So SAFR is basically to do welfare work?
Welfare work, yeah, absolutely, for anybody who has been in any of the services, even for one day. So one gets a complete cross-section. You might get a 90-year-old widow who you can't manage at all, or she's in an old people's home and wants extra funding or something like that. Or a young wife from up in the camp who's divorced from her husband, a couple of small children, and she wants to move up to Scotland. Anything like that, we go out and we see them. And we help them either through the social services, but more often than not, it's a matter of harmonising money. And so we would apply to their the regimental aid society of whatever regiment the husband was in, and get money from them, and then help set them up. And also, of course, a lot of them, you know, just want simply somebody to talk to in their old age, or they're a widow or something like that. So we get about almost 100 cases a year, but I've got 6 or 7 other people who help me on this, and it is, of course, a national organisation, SAFR. Our president is Prince Michael of Kent. It is run by a full-time team from London who work full-time, but all the rest are volunteers. And potentially, there are something like, I believe it's 12 million people in the country who can call upon our help.